pun intended. Another episode of The Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and today is February 2nd, 2010. And this is episode 344. More about this program and the guests that have provided us with such fascinating conversations can be found on our website, www.exogenynetwork.com. The Dawn of Shades always tries to bring interesting people right to the audience to hear about both new and old ideas. We focus on the people, places, and ideas that don't always make the mainstream news, the sorts of things that are sometimes labeled as alternative or paranormal. For the show tonight, if you'd like to have a question asked, you can email me at gscott@gmail.com or through the virtual auditorium on PalTalk by text. I do monitor the email during the program, so if you are listening outside of the virtual auditorium and would like to have a question answered, please email it to me. And I will ask the question for you. In the virtual auditorium, just put it into text, and I will try and catch it as the screen scrolls. If I don't catch it immediately, just repeat it again, and hopefully I'll catch it on the second round. For those of you who like to feel connected, I am on Facebook and Twitter, so you can link to me there. There's also a Dawn of Shades fan page on Facebook, so look for that, too. And this is our first program in February. We're still early in the year, and at that point when we're all looking at our resolutions for the new year and questioning whether or not it would really be possible to achieve them. The most common resolutions involve money, in acquiring it, saving it, spending it wiser, paying off old debts, or avoiding new ones. For myself, I'm sort of in the middle of America. I have almost enough, and I often think about how J-O-B stands for just over broke, and that's often been the case the last few months as I've coped with an injury and been unable to work my normal job. Money's been real tight for me, and most of my circle of friends is also coping with unusually tight budgets for a variety of reasons, none of which are out of the ordinary for any American today. Exogeny Network, that alter ego, has been struggling to acquire enough capital to make some investments in some necessary equipment. And I go through a checkbook triage regularly as I decide what is going to happen now and what will happen at some future point. And still, our car awaits new tires and struts. Most of you know exactly what I'm referring to when I mention that checkbook triage phrase, as you figure out what is the most critical need and imagine a life where your needs would not be accompanied with worries, where if you needed something, you could get it. I'm not saying that we would all be millionaires, but rather that we could afford to live without worries. Most of you are kind of snickering at this point, thinking, yeah, right, that's nothing more than pie in the sky, a foolish daydream. But what if it wasn't? What if you could really live a life of abundance and prosperity, where you had enough money to buy what you needed without doing that checkbook triage? Tonight's guest is a woman who knows the ropes, and maybe we'll all get some hints on how to avoid the agony of defeat at the hands of a checkbook. All right. So, Morgana, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. I was listening to what you're saying. I mean, checkbook triage, that's like a violent blood and gore relationship with money, and how sad that is, that listeners feel like they're being beat up by money. And I'm thinking, how does money feel being the recipient of all that blame and hurt and ill will?
Well, you know, money is the most common reason that people end up in divorces.
Mm-hmm.
It shatters relationships. It destroys families. You know, I've even heard, like, after Katrina here in New Orleans, people who couldn't face the losses that they had as a result of the storm, it actually resorted to suicide because of their inability to cope.
Yeah.
And it all really boils down to what money was doing to their lives.
Well, I've been a life and business coach for 15 years, and the number one problem people face, the number one obstacle to people living the fulfilling life they dream of, is money. And you just pointed out to some really monstrous situations where money does kill. Money preys upon and kills nice, not just poor people, but, you know, just nice, middle-class, educated people who have done the right thing all their life, and so what? So what? Now they can't get a loan. Or the government lets them down. Or the universe comes at them with this kind of destruction in Katrina and Haiti.
Right.
And yeah, that is a prison. It creates a lot of suffering. It isn't just what you can buy. It's tied in with how you feel about yourself. I mean, even the word, your self-worth. And the way people look at you. And they look at you differently if you're poor and you're rich. And they treat you differently. And being rich doesn't necessarily mean better relationships. I've worked with some very rich people, and their friends and relationships were just always taking advantage of them because, you know, they were all about love, so they were letting people use them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really sad. So, yeah, money causes problems, and money is the bad guy in, I think, most people's lives.
It's a big boogeyman. I mean, it's the five-letter word nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah. And it really is. It really is monstrous. I mean, little girls are sold by their mommies into sexual slavery for money. That's the world we live in.
Right. You know, if you talk about having it, then you're being a braggart. If you talk about not having it, you're a beggar. There's no middle ground here.
And also, there's also a thing about, if money does these horrible things, you know, overwhelms people, kills people. When those people committed suicide, they were being being murdered by money. Money was out to get them. If money does such terrible things, like makes you struggle, makes you work so hard and you never have enough and you keep having to not do what you love and maybe even sell out, if you are a kind and loving and spiritual person, and money is such a jerk, you are going to protect yourself from this monster because it doesn't fit your values, and it's a scary son of a bitch. And that's why we struggle, because healthy, nice people don't want to have a relationship with a monster. And money is.
So how do you take away money's monster tendencies?
Well, the way I start is really how we're starting this phone call, is uncovering the monstrosity. And that can be really hard for people who not only have overcome adversity, but they're really healthy about it. I was working with a lovely client this morning for hours because she is so evolved. and healthy and has compartmentalized the bad stuff to such a degree, which is a very healthy, you know, adaptive thing to do, that it was very, very hard to find the pain. And God bless her, she stuck it out until we got there. But the first step is to find the monster. I would ask you to start with, what are the negative things, only the negative things, that you have seen and heard and experienced with money? And it's like an excavation. You're building up a court case against money.
Well, you know, making my own case, you know, I'm a fairly idealistic person.
Mm-hmm.
My entire life has been sort of geared that way.
Yeah.
You know, the lessons that I taught my kids was about, material things aren't the important things. That these emotional and spiritual things are much more important.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, money did remain a monster. We didn't have any, but we didn't, you know, it was a monster. It was the monster you had to deal with in terms of your day-to-day needs, you're paying your bills and everything else. And it was something that you had to sell out to, essentially trading a portion of your life in order to get enough just to get by.
Yeah, you probably wished that money didn't exist, and
yeah.
You only had a relationship with it because you had to, not because you wanted to.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm unusual in that. And
not at all, especially for somebody like you who is spiritually oriented. We get, because, you know, I come from the same background, I grew up with, you know, spiritual people and artists. I grew up with artists and idealistic people, and even my dad, the lawyer, is a diehard liberal.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up with a sort of reverse snobbery around money. I'm a much more enlightened, caring, spiritual individual than those people who are all about money. The man, the bad guys, you know, the corporate executives. I'm, you know, morally superior to them. And I may be, but that's no excuse for being poor. And it's also very, very easy when you're 12 years old to be too good for money because your parents are paying your expenses.
Right, right. And sooner or later, we all have to grow up and become acquainted with that five-letter word that we don't want to talk about, because it's a reality. I mean, you turn 18, you know, you're out in the world, and it's like you need money to trade for the things that you want and need.
And that impinges on your fun, on your life purpose, on your spirituality, on, you know, getting to play with your friends. It breaks up marriages. And it's interesting. It's like guys can't get dates or make their wives happy unless they're making money, so they don't feel loved for themselves. And I've also heard from women whose husbands were threatening to divorce them because the woman was spending money and the husband wasn't comfortable with that. The wife was spending too much money, and that used to be okay, but with the economy, the rules changed.
Okay.
Marriages that were really being held together because of money, when the money disappeared, the fault lines in the relationship became visible. And there's insecurity. I mean, I think we're all afraid of getting sick and not being able to afford health care. And the insurance rates are going up so quickly that my friends are dropping, just can't afford to pay the premiums, and then they get sick and they're tens of thousands of dollars in debt, which is unfair.
Yeah, it's true.
Everybody should. That should be a right, not a privilege of the wealthy, entitled few. Being homeless is a real fear. It's middle class people are living on the streets. I live in Beverly Hills, and I still see these recreational vehicles, like the RVs. These really, you know, RVs or just vans and stuff parked on the side of the street for weeks. And it took me a long time to realize that people were living in them because they didn't have houses. And that's what's going on right now. And that's where you're going to find your monster. That's where you're going to begin. The monster goes in even deeper into the stuff that doesn't look like it has to do with money. But any abuse or unfairness or any time that you felt unloved or unsafe in the world, money represents being loved. As sick as that is, money represents your safety. Many people's money is based on their parents, and if they were abused, their money becomes an abuser. And they feel bad about themselves, so they're punished by money. And that's where we start. And this is, I teach what I call financial alchemy. And alchemy is transmutation, but first you have to separate the good from the bad, the light from the dark. And the first step is nigridia, the blackening. And that's what we're doing right now, before I make everybody really, really depressed.
Yeah, you know, for the first time, I am seeing huge numbers of people who either have lost their homes and are, in fact, homeless, or are faced with the imminent possibility that it could happen, like in the next 90 days, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't a middle-class experience 10 years ago.
No, and frankly, it just makes me sick. It breaks my heart, and it makes me sick. Because I've always cared about people. Money was that necessary evil.
Right.
But it makes me sick, and it breaks my heart that this is going on, and it also makes me furiously angry. So you want all those feelings, because then you turn it into your money monster, and you blame him for every hurt, betrayal, pain in your life, and you blame him for it. If you were abused as a child, well, that has to do with money, because your parents held the purse strings. They were supposed to protect you, just like money is supposed to protect you.
Right.
So we create a monster, and he's your own very personal monster who picks you over to single out. This is not the pleasant part of the process, but once you get the monster, you can get rid of him.
So now,
and when you get rid of him,
how can we put him in a jar and get rid of him?
Oh, I think a jar isn't enough. Some people can just, and this used to work. I think that the way I work now goes so much deeper. I mean, it's really a shamanistic journey that I think more extreme measures are necessary than saying goodbye or you're fired.
Uh-huh.
I say whatever it takes. You know, some people throw their money off of a tall building or into a fiery pit, or I actually like pouring acid, pouring, you know, sulfuric acid on the monster and just, you know, eradicating every trace. You know, whatever it takes. And when it's gone, you'll know it. And here's the key to the process is there's no ambiguity. It's more extreme than you think it'll be, and there's no ambiguity. Either the monster is there or it's not. If there's any trace left, it's not gone yet. When it's gone, you'll know it, because it'll feel weird. It will probably feel lighter. In fact, the room may look lighter. There will also be a vacuum. And that can feel good, and that can also feel a little scary. And because the vacuum fills itself. What? Oh, what did you say?
I said vacuums want to be filled.
Yeah, so we have to fill it with something good. Once you fire your money, you have no money. You need a new money.
Uh-huh.
So you invite in what one client called your money honey, and that just stuck. And your money honey is the lover you've always yearned for. This is somebody that, and here's a key, a person that you want even though he's money, not because he's money, this is a relationship not based on give me a car, what have you done for me lately, money, that's not going to work. But let's say you have a thing for Matthew McConaughey, and you would want him in your life, whether he was money or not, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so your money is that kind, for the ladies out there, that kind of guy, the one who just makes your heart open up like a flower. And you want him so much, and he wants you so much. He's been waiting for you and wants you so much that it's up to you. You have all the power. You make it possible for him to be with you, and it becomes a love affair. He wants you to be happy. You want him to be happy. It's circular, and the best way to make him happy is to be good to yourself.
Okay.
And the interesting thing that comes out of it, and this is the woo-woo part that I can explain some of it. When you feel gorgeous and when somebody is, you know, your dream partner is in love with you, you're more confident and more attractive to a lot of things like clients and lovers and money.
Mm-hmm.
But weird stuff happens too, and I get these emails all the time of checks showing up out of nowhere. One recent story was a woman did what her money honey told her to do. Very cute story. Her money honey kept showing up dressed like John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever, and she tried to dress him differently, and he was just like, no, this is how I'm dressed. And he told her what to do. He wanted her to transfer money from one account to another. Who knows why? And this is actually on my blog, abundanceandprosperity.com. It's much better in her words, but this is the basic breakdown, is she was anxious. She didn't have money to make payroll that week. A bunch of people who owed her money weren't paying, and she didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets this cute money honey who's dressed like John Travolta, who tells her she has to transfer money. So she goes down to the bank, and she makes the transfer, and she gets in the car, and Saturday Night Fever is playing on the radio.
Okay.
Yeah. And then she goes to a coffee house to check her email, and she gets an email from a client that he was paying his invoice 90 days early, a five-figure invoice that covered the payroll. And she looked at the timestamp on the email and the timestamp on the bank receipt, 2 minutes. 2 minutes after she transferred the money, her client paid his bill. That's
always nice.
That's fun. And it wasn't like what her money honey told her to do made any sense. And it doesn't make any sense that the client spontaneously paid early. That is fun. And that happens all the time. Another woman, she did what her money honey told her to do, and she got a phone call that morning from her ex-husband offering to pay her $4,000-something tax bill spontaneously.
Okay,
within 24 hours.
Yeah.
So that is a different relationship with money. And it's not even about the numbers, because this is a relationship you're going to have for the rest of your life. And as long as the relationship is what have you done for me, money, you're going to be scared. You're going to be a victim. But when you're coming from the place of what would you like me to do, what would make you happy, and you're in this place of just selfless, unconditional, lusty love, your whole life changes. And money has a sense of humor.
At this point, I'm kind of going, you know, I really, I'm having trouble just kind of shifting money into that role. You know, and like some of the guys that are listening to the program, you know, how are they going to perceive this money, honey?
Hot, sexy woman who thinks he is the hottest guy and the most well-endowed guy in the universe.
Uh-huh.
And it's so much fun to work with guys because the guys who come to me want to be great men. You know, they want to be the best men they can be. They want to make their partners happy. They want to be able to stand up straight. And what I've heard from men is they can walk taller. Their wives are more turned on. They, you know, make more money, get better jobs. Their self-esteem is higher. Just like women, weird things sort of happen that may have nothing to do with money per se in, like, checks. But one client found himself in South Africa putting together an event with Desmond Tutu. That's pretty cool. And I had one wonderful client who actually hired me because he wanted to be able to talk to, you know, attractive women without getting tongue-tied. And this is very interesting to me because I had met him when I was speaking publicly, and this is a very handsome, intelligent guy who was scared to talk to attractive women. Which, when you think about it, that's hysterically funny because attractive women want to be talked to by guys like him.
Right.
And what changed it for him, and he didn't even have economic problems, but what worked for him is when we changed his money into this hot girl who thought he was just the sexiest, most wonderful man in the world, she would come along with him to bars and give him pep talks before he would talk to women.
Okay.
Because if she thought that he was great, it gave him more confidence.
Okay, so by visualizing money as an attractive partner instead of this big boogeyman monster,
yeah,
that's part of the process. Why is it so important?
Bottom line, money is simply a representative for our relationship with the universe, our mortality, our lovability, our happiness. And when the universe is a cruel, withholding, mean, unloving place, we suffer. And that shows up primarily in money, health, and love. And money is the biggest one of these problems. Everybody.
Money is just more or less a symbol that we, and I know that from talking to people, a lot of people measure another person's worth by their financial status in the world.
We measure our worth by our financial status in the world. We measure ourselves as a failure or a success. When we don't, and it feels like being punished when you're working so hard and giving so much value and you can't pay your bills. That's unfair. That's wrong.
It sort of becomes a curdling sort of cancer in the center of your soul, you know. No matter how hard you work, no matter how hard you try to do the right thing, and every month it's a juggling act between phone, electric, rent, insurance, car payment, water bill, you know, and you're like, whoa, you know, how am I going to get this done?
It's an abusive
relationship. Every month, but, you know.
It's talking to a woman who's with a boyfriend who beats her up, but he's the only one who will love it. That's kind of our relationship with money. He can put you down, he can beat you up, but he's the only game in town. Kind of, doesn't it? And what does that do to your self-esteem when you don't get to have it any better than that?
Right, yeah.
So you were saying that it's, you know, kind of hard to imagine a cute money honey like that, and that's because you didn't do the steps before that. I've tried skipping it, believe me. I don't like doing the monster part. But it creates the leverage. You need to, if your money honey is still tainted with your money monster, it doesn't work. So you don't get to a believable, real money honey until you've already passed through a believable, real horrible monster, and you haven't done that yet.
So in a sense,
it's
what
worth,
we're doing...
It's worth it, but that's the price of admission.
What we're doing is, you know, the whole idea of we're changing ourselves.
Yeah.
So that we perceive ourselves as being worth love, and therefore, because money and love, you know, culturally have been wound together, the universe doesn't love us because that's why, you know, we have a hard time financially. The world doesn't love us, or, you know, our family doesn't love us, and it just sort of just keeps coming on inward.
It creates a relationship dynamic that repeats itself over and over again. And when you're abused, you have you just inevitably, eventually turn it on yourself and have low self-esteem. Some more so than others. I'm not gonna lay the same thing on everybody. But the people who come to me, the value that they get that they never saw coming has everything to do with this confidence that they didn't expect. And it changes who they are in the world, and that is what makes me happy. I mean, for me, the money isn't about money. It's about feeling safe and free and loved and worthwhile and happy in the world. That's all that matters.
Uh-huh.
And money as a symbol, because it is such a hurtful symbol in the world, it also has the most leverage for changing your reality immediately, even before the numbers catch up. You know, I've had clients, my client Elliot, he's a hoot, $80,000 within 6 hours of our coaching session. I mean, beat that. And it doesn't really matter. I ran into him last weekend. He's just a happy guy. He met this tall, blonde, gorgeous money honey who wanted him to love her for herself because she's sexy and wonderful. And it's so cute. He remembered that he had seen a nickel outside the day before, but he hadn't picked it up because it was only a nickel and it was dirty. So he went outside, you know, into his backyard and looked for the nickel, and he found the nickel. And he was just jumping into the air and saying, "Thank you, money." So sweet, so full of joy. And then a couple of hours later, he gets this phone call from his office, and this weird check has come in.
Mm-hmm.
I've had two women who received their first child support checks in decades, coincidentally, just, you know, spontaneously within 24 hours of doing the process.
Wow.
And that just happens. And if it didn't happen immediately, it doesn't... That's not the measure of it, because I've had clients who, you know, they didn't see it the first week.
Uh-huh.
And then they write to me later. One of them, Rita, we did the process a week later because we coached for a while. She said, "Morgana, it's been a week and I haven't seen any money. I haven't received any money." And I said, "Well, what have you done to make him happy?" She paused. She said, "Nothing." That takes away your power. This woman ended up doubling her income every 6 months. She went from what would have been $24,000 a year to $197,000 by 9 months a year later.
Substantial increase, you know.
Outrageous. And I get emails. I have one client, God, I love her. Her money kept telling her to take a walk. For weeks, she was struggling to get a client, and her money told her to take a walk. And finally, you know, after weeks of this, she took a walk and picked up two clients. And then a few months later, her money has been telling her to clean up her house, but she puts it off, and she's watching her bank account dwindle, and she's not getting any new clients. And finally, she cleans up the house, and bang, a bunch of new clients.
Okay, so essentially what would be looking at doing is you take the monster in your life, all the negative things that you've been attracting to yourself, all the abuse and just misery.
Yeah.
And stuff it into this monster, and then you can destroy the monster. And
mm-hmm.
when you're finished, you can create something wonderful, and you start attracting the things in your life, not just money, but self-worth, you know, all the things that make us happy.
And the key here is that you have the power, because the power here is not what money gives you or what money does for you, because that makes you a victim again.
Uh-huh.
But it's how great and loving and wonderful a relationship partner you can be. If, for instance, since I coach more women than men, although I love coaching men, I notice patterns of what money likes and doesn't like. And one of the things that money likes the most is lacy lingerie. And so this comes up all the time where, you know, a client has her hot, sexy, wonderful, dreamy, romantic money honey, and she'll ask him, because this is the question you're always asking is, money, what do you want from me to make you happy? And he didn't say go out and get a job or work harder or, you know, whatever. He would say, go out and buy some black fishnet stockings with a seam up the back.
Okay.
Why not? He's a guy. Of course he's going to love that. And interesting things happen. You know, it can be a check comes in. It can be a new contract. It can also be that you fall back in love with your husband.
Yeah.
That he falls back in love with you, and he doesn't know what's going on because you haven't told him what you're coaching on. The energy shifts. Oh, here's another fun one, is he might start making money. I see that a lot. If I coach the wife and suddenly the husband's income spikes. Weird, isn't it?
Well, you know, the thing is that by eliminating negativity from your own life,
mm-hmm.
it's going to expand outwardly from you.
Yeah, and it's more than just expelling negativity, which we know is the first half. It's replacing it with something so juicy and fun. I mean, fun, none of that. You should understand that money is a positive force and it's an energy field and blah, 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 blah. Who cares about that? I want Sean Connery packing, you know, with the tight pair of jeans. A young Sean Connery. That is going to turn me on.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, I think about it, and, you know, a lot of times, you know, we get in this role of money is evil, money is bad, and being in pursuit of money makes you a bad person.
Yeah.
And, you know, that you know, if you don't make it financially, you are not worthy. And if
mm-hmm.
you do, you're bad because you sold out.
Yep. And even after you change your relationship with money, you're going to hear it still. And you'll have a choice whether you're going to be a loving relationship partner or cheat on, betray, and abandon your money, honey, and go back to your monster. If I were to say to you things like, you're evil, I wish you didn't exist, you cause fights, you cause wars, you break up marriages, you abuse children, you get in the way of happiness because of you, I can't be spiritual and I can't be an artist because you are evil and unfair, and I wish you didn't exist, and I only have a relationship with you because I have to. But when it comes down to it, I know that I'm too good for you. How would you feel?
Yeah,
if I said that
definitely,
to you?
Yeah, you wouldn't be real enthusiastic about that relationship.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to stay with me if I said that to you or acted
uh-huh.
like it.
Uh-huh. And for most of us, you know, those are things we've actually said. You know, how many times, everybody who's listening, you know, I know you've done it. you've thrown down the checkbook when you're doing your monthly bills. You're like, I hate money. You know, it never works out right. And, you know, I'm always short. And I'm so tired of working all the time. And all I see out of it is the inside of my eyelids at the end of another long day.
And that's so sad. That's so sad because your money is a slave driver. Your money is unfair. Your money uses you up.
Yeah, you know, I often, as I was getting ready for the show tonight, I kept thinking, a friend of mine used to say, job stands for just over broke.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know what? It's the truth. Because when you have a job, you don't have time to enjoy anything because you're working to death. And when you don't have a job, you don't have the money to enjoy anything.
Yeah.
And this was a sort of a catch-22.
Well, jobs used to be different. You know, back in the 50s and the 60s, having a job at General Motors was kind of cushy. And you could have a nice house for next to nothing, and you'd have your car and health insurance next to nothing. And you were guaranteed a job for the rest of your life.
You got a vacation, had health insurance, you know, and so forth and so on.
Being an employee, it just is not safe anymore. Jobs are not secure. I believe that we live in an entrepreneurial economy. That isn't necessarily bad. The great thing about an entrepreneurial economy is it forces you to identify your unique value. It forces you to be creative.
Uh-huh.
And flexible. It gives you more choices because even if you're working for somebody, you're also working for yourself. I mean, being able to know your value, what you have to offer, the benefits that you can provide gives you a lot more power, and resourcefulness makes you less of a victim because you can get back on your feet and create something new.
Well, in the, you know, in another sense, the economy, because it's so bad, because at any time most of us could lose our jobs, you start looking for a niche to occupy.
Yeah.
And the most common niche is because the jobs are pretty scarce, is to create one. And by creating it, you become an entrepreneur.
And that can actually be quite empowering rather than, you know, working for somebody else. Now, believe me, I am all for job creation and security and universal health care, especially the last piece, and no poverty, no hunger. These are things that really drive me. I do what I do. I'm a coach in the first place because I cannot bear to see suffering and injustice. Cannot be with it, and I feel compelled. I am that obnoxious do-gooder who eavesdrops on your private conversation and then gives you unsolicited advice. Because I want to save the world. That's why I do what I do. And my problem was I'm great at helping people. That's my comfort zone. Asking for money and charging for it is such a natural conflict for me. Because if I take money, I'm hurting the person. Oh, they can't afford me. They'll think I'm not a good person. It's not about that. You know, that's where I come from. And what it took for me to be able to get paid and not feel like a bad person about it was, since I always care about people more than money, I had to make money a person that I could love for himself. And when I don't respect money, and the way that shows up is discounting my services, which is not respectful to the other person because I'm telling that person that they don't have what it takes, or doing my precious hard learned, valuable work for free. Every time I do that, I'm telling my money honey buddy's not important. And it hurts his feelings. Every time I blame him and I snipe, it hurts his feelings. And believe me, we have fights. We have fights. Like, no. Why aren't they making more money this month? And then I have to remember to be a good relationship partner and say, what do you want me to do? And he always, whenever I'm, like, stressed out about money, he says, it's coming. Just trust me. That is the greatest act of love that you can give your money, honey, is to trust him. To stop treating him like a monster and to trust him. And that changes the way you show up.
And especially in this economy, you know, we tend to be, and especially women. Women in general tend to be very insecure about money. I don't know if it goes back to the old thing we were taught about math differently. You know, I've heard all the reasons why women tend to be less secure about money. But
you
want to
hear my theory?
What is it?
And I've come to this recently. Testosterone versus estrogen. Testosterone is a confidence drug. That's why guys love to compete. Why they love to lift those heavy, stupid things and, you know, run those stupid long distances and all those things that I don't like to do. Because men have all this energy, they have all this sex drive, and more than anything, they have a lot of competitive confidence. They love to negotiate the deal. They love to sell and charge. Women have estrogen. And this is what I read about estrogen. I find this fascinating. Estrogen makes us insecure.
Ah.
Estrogen makes us gain weight and feel insecure and seek love and validation outside of ourselves. And what happens, and one of the ways they learn this is when they give testosterone therapy to women, like around menopause, the women get more confident, they get back their sex drive, and their bone density improves. When men, like sex offenders, are given drugs to suppress testosterone, because I talked to one, and he talked about how that completely changed the way, you know, just his experience of life, is that he became insecure, and he also really wanted to kind of bond and collaborate in actually very feminine way. I don't remember why he went on estrogen. I don't think he's a sex offender, but and that's when it really hit me. So we women, the need to please and placate has a lot to do with estrogen. Our need to be liked and our need to make other people feel better, even if it costs us. And maybe that's what makes us good mommies. I don't know.
Yeah,
but as women lose estrogen, that's why women in their 40s start to, you know, get more confident. Maybe they, you know, leave a marriage that isn't working for them. They have their own version of midlife crisis, and men get older and they start to want to be loved more. That's my theory.
Yeah, like, you know, it kind of fits with our stereotypes of gender differentiation.
Mm-hmm.
That because men are and boys are more competitive, more oriented on to what to do.
They like to go to the gym.
Yeah.
To me, that's the great demarcation.
You know, women build the nest, okay? We got this nesting thing going on. We're all about what we can do for others. We're taught that from the time we're very young girls, actually. And then we have children, and it's, you know, those 18 years for each one of them where it's all about their needs.
Yeah,
so,
and part
you know,
of the nest is really wanting to make things beautiful. And, yeah, these are kind of gender role extremes, and there are always exceptions. But just from a chemical basis, there is a strong tendency to go into these different directions. Now, I've met, you know, women who are really competitive and make a lot of money. In fact, some of them hire me because, and this is very interesting, when a woman is struggling, she can become very manly because she doesn't feel safe. So she gets into that fight or flight mode, and she can get very tough, and she can really suppress her femininity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she becomes a lawyer, and she becomes an accountant, and she enters these masculine fields, which I'm all for. I'm totally for that. But what happens is she gets a hardness. And this was one of those unexpected consequences of changing, you know, getting your money honey. If they would get their money honey, who would send them out to get a pedicure or go shopping or get the lingerie, and what I would see in the coming weeks and months is her money honey was bringing out her femininity. She was getting more girly, but when I say that, like, as a good thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, she was able to relax and be beautiful and be admired and feel feminine.
Uh-huh.
Guys, on the other hand, who can feel like eunuchs that they aren't making money because they're not attracting the relationships they want, and they feel like failures, and other men are looking down on them. When they get their money honey, they start to become more masculine. They start to feel more confident. And
there's nothing more attractive to women than a confident man.
Yeah, and typically speaking, a feminine, confident, womanly woman is more attractive to the opposite sex.
Yes.
So I've just seen this surprising tendency that I never expected, that women become more feminine and men become more masculine because they feel safe and loved and admired by their dream lover, who we call money honey. Or you can give him another name. If anybody's listening right now at their computer.
Right. Well, everybody pretty much is because it's
okay. When you have a chance, go to my blog, abundanceandprosperity.com, and scroll down to the post called Money Honey of the Highlands. This is the coolest thing ever. This was written in by a financial alchemist, meaning a woman who has gone through this process, and her money honey showed up in her bed one night. And when he got out of bed, he was wearing a kilt. And his name was Declan McRae. And the way she wrote it was, it just read just like a romance novel. And I'm an expert in romance novels. And not only is it hysterical and makes you swoon and romantic, and it's just so funny, but if you read closely, you'll also read about how this relationship with Duncan McRae healed very old wounds.
Well, hold that thought right there, Morgana, because it's time for us to take a break.
Okay.
So, folks, while we're away from your computer, why don't you check out either Morgana's site at abundanceandprosperity.com or DesireDreamNetwork.com, and the Donna Shades will be right back with more from Morgana.
Mm.
From hiding, and I'm bound to keep on riding. I got one more silver dollar, but I'm not gonna let them catch me, no.
This is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We'll go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, you've got to listen to ICAR, that's International Community for Alien Research, www.icar1.com. I should know, I'm Irish.
A radio program that looks at the UFO topic from a fresh perspective. Sound interesting? Then join us here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network every Friday evening at 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central for The Joyner Report, hosted by journalist and researcher Angela Joyner.
Get your dose of truth with the Truth Hurts Radio Show with your host, Charles Giuliani, Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The truth hurts. Ignorance kills.
This is Alejandro Rojas, the host of Open Minds Radio, a show focused on UFO news and updates. Join me every Thursday right here on the UFO Paranormal Network at 5 p.m. Central for the latest in UFO news and some wonderful guests who are going to share their insights or their experiences with this, the enigmatic UFO phenomenon.
Are you interested in a radio program that focuses on the deeper aspects of the UFO topic? Would you like to explore the facts and truths of what ufology and UFO research are all about? Then please join us here every Saturday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, with your host, D. Andrew, right here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Remember, UFO research is not a belief system.
UPRN 105 is about to get a little darker. Dark Plains Radio Show is coming to UPRN 105. Don't miss your flight into the unknown.
Hey, hi there. Got your attention? I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious what you were doing from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. See, I host this really interesting little radio program that airs live then, and we bring in all sorts of guests. Authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.giascott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Hi, this is James Arthur Yanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio, inviting you to join me on a road to truth via the path of non-contradiction. Join us each week on Feet to the Fire, a show with the goals of examining a subject matter on its own merits and test how it stands up to the many possibilities found in reality, all without pre-drawn conclusions found in personal bias. No left or right wings here. No pounding the pulpit of ego-driven my way or the highway attitudes. But there are no free passes given either. Answers to questions are important, but equally important is the reasons and methods used to find the answer. The lack of contradiction is the final judge here. On Feet to the Fire.
Feet.
Sunday evenings.
To the fire.
How do you listen?
Fire.
www.feettofire.com for more information.
When it comes to the oil crisis, we are all passengers on the Titanic. With global oil production peaking and demand steadily increasing over the long term, oil prices will soon be back to the levels of last year and even higher. If we stay on the current path, we will hit the iceberg. Hydrogen fuel cell vehicles are the solution to the oil crisis. They are the only technology that can be scaled up globally and meet customer requirements for driving range, fueling time, cost when mass produced, extreme weather performance, and trunk and passenger space. While the hydrogen to power these vehicles will initially come from natural gas, this is better than gasoline and only a bridge to hydrogen from wind and solar. Major car companies have hundreds of hydrogen fuel cell vehicles on the road today, and they will be arriving at dealerships by 2015. But the hydrogen fueling infrastructure needs to be built. Contact your members of Congress today and tell them to start building the hydrogen fueling infrastructure now. Give our planet a break and America back its future. Brought to you by AmericansForAHydrogenEconomy.org.
Are you a fan of the unknown?
Do you constantly watch the sky, wondering if there's something out there?
In fear of things going bump in the night?
Whispers Radio brings you headfirst into the world of the paranormal with the latest news and interviews with the paranormal elite.
With hosts Jordan Klein and Nick Queen, you are sure to be consumed in the world of ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, conspiracy theories, and the unknown.
So check out Whispers Radio every Tuesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Central. And give us a call, 1-866-514-1600.
Visit us at www.whispersradio.com.
To UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
www.ufoparanormalradio.com.
Dawn Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and once again, I would like to remind everyone to visit the website, www.exogitynetwork.com. You can sign up for the newsletter, wander around, explore the website, the page there for our guest tonight, and you can let me know what you think of it. There are links to take you to blogs, Twitter, and even Facebook. If you have a question that you wish to have asked, you can email it to me at giascott@gmail.com. I am monitoring the emails during the program with Morgana tonight, and I'll try real hard not to miss anything. Morgana, before we get started, would you please tell everyone where your website is and what they might find there?
My website is abundanceandprosperity.com, and what you'll find there is automatically you can get a free download of my How to Be a Money Magnet CD. It was an interview with Stuart Tan, who is this huge figure in personal development, and he likes to interview people. So he interviewed Donald Trump and Tony Robbins and all the people from The Secret. And then he found me on Facebook, of all places, and interviewed me. And it was such great fun that because I want everybody to be free and loved and have a great relationship with money and themselves and the universe and other people, I give away this free MP3 download at abundanceandprosperity.com. And because we were talking about that, if you can go to the page and scroll down to the post called Money Honey of the Highlands, this is probably my favorite email to date of somebody who changed her relationship with money. And I sort of pick up where she already has the new Money Honey, but it's so much fun because it reads like a romance novel, and if I could speak with a brogue, I would read it to you now because it's just so great. And if anybody went there and read it during the break, please send Gia an email. I would love to get feedback.
Yeah, you know, I read through your website, and it was like, this is just great, you know, see the changes that occurred in people's lives and the way that they envision money being after they've made this change in their life. That's fascinating.
And the money amount is like the least of it. One of my people emailed me that she got it. She understood that money is not a number. Money is a relationship. And life happens. Just because you have a cute money honey doesn't mean, you know, life doesn't happen. It's just different when you have your money honey. And it affects other areas of your life. There's my client Nova, who is on the blog. If you just look on the right and you look up Nova, her story is that money honey gets a woman pregnant. After we changed her relationship with money, and her relationship with money was fine, her relationship with her husband was great, and she couldn't get pregnant. And she came to a call devastated because she had gotten her period again, and they had been trying for years to have a baby. And I was just like, you can't have this. Everybody else can have it, but you can't have this thing that you want more than anything in the world, mm-hmm. which is basically about, you know, that is the model of a money monster, whether it has to do with money or not. So we did the process. We did, you know, we just went back to the beginning and created a new monster and a new honey. And at the end of the session, her money smiled and touched her belly. And that day, her bleeding dissipated. And by the next morning, she was pregnant. And she took a couple of tests. She went to the doctor. Within 24 hours of doing the process, the same old process, she got pregnant. Wild, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, a lot of times people think all we're talking about is financial success, and we're really not. Because the money is, like you said, the least of it.
Yeah.
It's more representation of how we're perceiving ourselves.
Yeah, and our place in the universe and the happiness that we get to have and the love that we get to have. And the greatest thing about this, like the woman who wrote Money, Honey of the Highlands, if you knew her background has everything to do with abuse and not being loved.
Mm-hmm.
And having this new relationship, you know, her imaginary Money, Honey, when it's done right, your money, honey, is so real that my married clients tell me that they're not comfortable with it because they feel like they're cheating on their husband. To which I respond that nobody to date has actually had physical sex with their money, honey, and only one person has gotten pregnant.
Yeah.
But it heals that unlovable place, and that's what matters more than anything on earth, is being loved.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people I'm watching as we're talking, people aren't really understanding what we're talking about. They think we're talking about just money.
Sorry.
And it really isn't about just money. I mean, you know, come on, you know, we're not talking about a sugar daddy or sugar mama. You know, we're not talking about that kind of relationship with a money honey. We're talking about how we see ourselves, about our self-perception, about our relationship with the universe. You know,
here's something about why sugar daddy doesn't work. Because I've been doing this for 8 years now, ever since I discovered it and had my own change in relationship from, and I can talk about that this hour, but so I tested this on, you know, hundreds of guinea pigs that I call clients. And, clients might have their money honey look like a fluffy red cat or a horse or a dog or Oprah or Gandhi or a fairy godmother. The dogs and the cats and the horses sometimes work for a little while, but even the best friend, none of that really worked like a lover. And people who tried out, you know, really fought me on this and, you know, insisted that no, their money is, you know, their same sex, fairy godmother, it's my highest self. When they came back and they ended up with a money honey who was a lover, they understood. And here's the key. You are equals. Your money honey needs you as much as you need him. You are no longer a victim. There is a power balance. And when a man is in love, he will do anything in the world to win the woman he loves. And we as women, when we are in love, we will do anything to make that relationship work. So there's an inspiration on a level that you don't get with a sugar daddy. What's in it for the sugar daddy? If you're just taking advantage of him, why would he want to be in the relationship? It's a two-way relationship. If you read Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, there is a chapter that nobody talks about. Lots of people in my industry, they love to talk about Think and Grow Rich and talk about things like decisiveness and having a vision and blah, 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 blah. Nobody talks about this chapter called sexual transmutation because they don't understand it. But what Napoleon Hill says is that the highest vibration of all vibrations, the highest vibration of attracting the best stuff is sex. Higher than love, higher than agape, which is like love for everybody, higher than friendship, higher than Beatle music. And that's a close one, is sex. And he says, you know, use the energy of sex, whether it's, you know, winning your wife or whatever. That's how to make money. What he didn't do was take it as far as I do, where you aren't making money to win the girl. Money is the girl. And she's worth your love, whether she does anything or not, as long as the relationship is, what have you done for me lately? You're going to be a victim.
Yeah.
Sometimes a happy victim, sometimes a not happy victim, but you've given all your power away and you haven't given money any reason to want to stay with you. If I was dating a guy and all I was dating him for was what he could give me, that relationship wouldn't last, and it shouldn't.
Well, you know, anybody, you know, male or female, that has been single a good chunk of their adult life has probably dated somebody more for material reasons than for anything of higher purpose, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been through that. We know that it doesn't work, and we know why. You know, and it becomes a case of you feel like, essentially, you know, you become a prostitute of sorts because you're trading a piece of yourself in return for material things.
Or buying other people's love. How does that make you feel about yourself? Because I've coached those people, too.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, one of, you know, we're talking about, people talk about how to attract money all the time. Very few people talk about how to repel money. I actually wrote an article on the five top ways to repel money, and number one, excuse me, is to let people owe you money. When you let people disrespect your money, you are disrespecting your money.
Uh-huh.
I'm choking for a second. So for those of you listening who are disappointed because you think what I'm talking about has nothing to do with money, you really have to take a look at the success stories at abundanceandprosperity.com. And the posts, one of them is called Out of the Blue. God, there are just so many. The long ones are in the blog itself. The ones with nice sound bites went into my success stories. But I have not met anyone or any other program that has matched financial results anywhere near what I see. I mean, the emails that I get in, every one or two days, and they're talking about thousands of dollars and tens of thousands of dollars, and even more important, having a new relationship with life and feeling different about themselves. But the numbers show up, and that's great because that's measurable, and it facilitates a better life. And it also is great for marketing. I just simply don't have room to put up all the stories, but you'll see. Laura Kane, $10,000 in 48 hours. Catherine Bean, $3,000 in 24 hours. It's just, you know, lots and lots and lots of stuff like that. So on a financial basis, yeah, God, absolutely. It works like gangbusters. Again, I've never seen anything like it.
Well, you know, a lot of times we think that we're being selfish if we want money, and we're told that too, especially girls, you know, because if we're money hungry, we're greedy so-and-sos and so forth and so on. But the thing is that we cannot provide the things to our family that they need, be it college educations, health insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, unless we have money in our lives.
Yeah. And you don't even have to defend or justify it because he's a gorgeous guy worthy of your love. My problem was, you know, here I am wanting to save the world, but I was profoundly uncomfortable with asking to be paid. Because
that's a very difficult thing as an artist, as a writer, as a person who provides a service. A lot of times, you know, we have a hard time setting a value and expecting people to pay for it. We feel that we are somehow wrong for doing that.
Yeah, I was afraid of hurting people. And to top that off, my first job out of college where I was a religion major, not an econ major, a religion major.
Uh-huh.
The only job that I could get out of college, who knows why, happened to be in an investment bank. Talk about the biggest joke in the world, because I have trouble with zeros. I'm really not good at numbers. And I'm working at this investment bank. And the people I was working with were just appalling. They had pictures of prostitutes taped up onto computers on the same desk that I was. They were talking about women's breast sizes, including mine, in front of me. And they were all about making money, and I despised them. I was so much better than them.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I think I was, but but it wasn't because
of,
and I looked down on them because money was a high value for them. Now, if you think about it, they also had wives and children that they were providing for, that they were really committed to providing for. I just don't like the way they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come down to L.A. not wanting to be them. No, I'm a healer, you know. I'm not like that. I'm not about the money. And I embodied that for a very long time. And here I was from the very beginning of being a coach. I have always been magical. That's part of why, you know, these wild and weird things happen to people I coach. I've always had that talent.
Uh-huh.
I'm psychic and I'm magical. And a math and science major in high school. So from the very beginning that I started coaching people just on a volunteer basis in the entertainment industry, within 2 weeks, one of my clients was nominated for an Emmy. I got another client with almost no credits on a primetime, as a series regular on a primetime TV show. I mean, you know, just cool things. First-time director sold his film for $500,000. So I had a reputation. People wanted to work with me, and they would ask me how much I charged, and I would choke. I felt so guilty about asking for money that I look at now as being very, very little money, but I was so apologetic and embarrassed to be asking for anything at all.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, I'm dishing out a fortune, you know, on education, and I've got my website up and my business card and my brochures because I'm a really good student. And 7 times in a row, because I took the class on overcoming objections, I got people to say yes to hiring me, and then they didn't show up, and I hadn't been paid. And by that time, I was in the pits of despair and rage and fury at the universe that I knew my talent, I knew my life purpose, and I couldn't even do it. I couldn't even give it away. And I hated God. I felt like I was the butt of this huge cosmic joke.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good place to be. And it occurred to me at that time that money had to be my next area of spiritual growth, because I wasn't going to be helping anybody if I wasn't making any money. And soon after that, I had a marvelous coach who knew that I was, you know, what do I do when I have no money? I enroll in another class. So this time I'm studying relationship coaching training. So, hey, I'm also a relationship coach. Anyway, my poor coach had been hearing me suffer for months, and he wasn't able to help me. And then one day he asked me, well, what happened with money growing up? And I am, you know, not a victim. I'm this enlightened person. And I really hadn't thought about things that had happened a couple of decades ago where I had an inheritance, a major inheritance stolen, and by someone I loved.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I had my whole college fund stolen by my stepfather, who I loved. And because I was 12 and not supporting myself and, you know, above those, you know, dirty money issues, I didn't think it affected me. I just kind of tucked it away and didn't take it personally and just made a decision, which was the right decision at the time, that this was between the grown-ups, that it had nothing to do with me. I wasn't going to take sides. This was between the grown-ups. That was the right decision when you're 12 years old.
Right.
But when you're 32 years old, that decision no longer makes sense. And as soon as I remembered those things, it was like, you know, that cartoon light just went on over my head. It's like, oh, my God, no wonder I have money issues. And then my clever coach asked a magical question: if money were a person, who would money be? And presto magico, I saw this big, scary, dirty, violent biker who caused fights. And some girls liked that, but big, scary, dirty, violent, in the wife beater shirt and the tattoos and the like the sideburns and the bald head. I didn't want to be anywhere near him. I was frightened of him. And if I were at a party, I would have my eye on him the whole time to create maximum distance between him and myself. And I realized at that moment that that's exactly what I was doing with money. I was creating distance between money and myself, and I didn't have a clue. So the biker and I broke up.
Uh-huh.
Great. Now I have no money. I just fired the money that I had. What am I going to do now?
Right.
So I thought to myself, well, who would I, because I, you know, money was scary. And it's like, who would I want in my life so much that I would want him even though he was money? Not because of what he could do for me, but even though he was money. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Tall, Dark, Handsome, prep school boy in tails and carrying a bouquet of red flowers just showed up.
Uh-huh.
Loved me. And I got how much he wanted to be with me, but it was up to me to make it possible. All of this is just accidental. My coach had no idea this was going to happen, and he never was able to make it happen with anybody else. It was just like, I was chosen.
Right.
Happened. So I could tell how much he wanted to be with me, and it was up to me to make that possible. And I asked him, what do you need from me to stay with me? Because he wanted me so much, and he told me. He said, I want you to trust me, and I want you to stop treating me like a monster. And at that moment, I recognized how I had been treating him like a monster every time somebody asked me what I charged. And I was ashamed and embarrassed of my money.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a decision that I would never do that again. That next time he gave me a gift, like somebody wanted to hire me, I would say thank you. And I would not be embarrassed by my money. Because he's this beautiful, handsome guy who loves me. And I'm not going to squash that.
So, like in my case, where I shifted responsibility to my partner and he became the business manager and I didn't have to cope with it anymore, it's like saying, I don't want to deal with money, and therefore he's over there and I don't have to look at him.
Ooh, how would you feel if your life partner did that to you? I don't want to deal with you. I'm not going to look at you. Stand over there.
I have to admit, I wouldn't be very happy.
No. I've driven money away by cheating on him. Where this was one of the big things I learned, because it's interesting, like that week I had, you know, when I changed my relationship, I had no money whatsoever. I had no clients. I actually had one half of a client. I was making $100 a month. Out of the blue, four people showed up who wanted to hire me. They didn't want sample sessions because as a coach we're trained to do the stupidest thing in the world, which is give away free sessions, like doctors are going to give away free surgery. So I had to bite my tongue. It was really uncomfortable to allow people to hire me That's how bad I was. It was hard to allow people to hire me to shut up and say, okay, when do you want to begin? This is my fee. And I had 4 opportunities to practice it that week. So I went from nothing to 4 people paying me more than I had ever charged before. And they were glad to do it. One of my financial alchemy affirmations is that people love to give me money because I add value to their lives. They are happy. They cannot wait to give themselves the gift of working with me. They get to invest in themselves just like you would love. You know, it feels so good to take yourself to the spa, give yourself a gift. And that's what I let people do.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, because like I said, you know, that's been a very difficult thing for me to do is set a value on my services and not feel guilty about it.
Oh, want to hear a trick?
Yeah.
Don't charge what you think you're worth, because you will vote differently day by day, especially at that moment somebody wants to hire you. You charge what your money honey tells you to charge.
Okay.
Very differently, and you stick to it to be a nice relationship partner, to let him know that he's important to you. Not because he's money, but because he loves you. And you're going to do that to be a good relationship partner. I was starting to tell a story. So here I have like these 4 clients. Within 6 months, I had more clients than I could handle. It was like they were popping out of my head. I couldn't keep track of them. I was completely overwhelmed. What a problem to have.
Yeah.
And a year later, yeah, they all started going away. And that really freaked me out because I had made up this thing. I had a cute money honey. This was not supposed to happen. I was really angry, and I felt betrayed and hurt and frightened. And I heard, you know, this niggling thought in the back of my head where those annoying thoughts pop up,
yeah,
that I should start from the beginning as if I had never done it before. I didn't want to do that. And more clients and more money went away. And I kept hearing, you know, you have to start over as if you've never done it before. And out of humility, I said, okay. And I turned to my money honey. I know exactly where he was standing. And I said, why? Why are you leaving me? And he pointed out that 3 times that year, I had clients who said they couldn't afford to continue coaching with me. And my response was, oh, that's okay. You'll pay me when XYZ happens. Because when I had a coach and I couldn't afford to pay her, she said, okay, you'll pay me when XYZ happens, and I did.
Uh-huh.
These people didn't, and I didn't enforce it. When I was saying, oh, that's okay, you'll pay me later, what I was really saying was, oh, that's okay, the money doesn't matter. That's okay, look at what a great person I am. I want you to like me. That's okay, the money doesn't matter. And I said that to my boyfriend here 3 times. And so he said to me, and you know what? I got the message. And when I heard that, the word for it is I was mortified. I felt so horrified and guilty that I had done that. I was totally wrong. I was totally wrong in that relationship. I shouldn't have done that. That was so unfair to this kind, loving man. And I did that, and I said, you're right, what can I do to make amends? And he said, you have to go back and tell those people you need to be paid, which is about the most unpleasant thing that I could think of doing. But
yeah,
I did it.
Collecting isn't a real, you know, it's something nobody likes to do, is to collect on a bad debt.
Some people do, I don't. And it was scary. It was uncomfortable. It was embarrassing. Out of those 3 people, one of them paid me part of what I was owed, and it was really, really hard to get it. The other 2 had no integrity. Meanwhile, my income quadrupled from unexpected sources.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I like to think, based on a recurring pattern in my relationship with money, is that when I do what my money tells me to do, Money comes into my life. I also have realized over and over again that money doesn't leave, I leave. Try wrapping your brain around that. You kind of can't until you are in it and you have the relationship. It makes experiential sense. It may not make sense while you're listening to this call. That's why I recommend actually downloading my interview with Stuart Tan at abundanceandprosperity.com and really sniff around the different posts, because that might make it make more sense. Oh, also, a cool thing about the Stuart Tan MP3, I get these amazing emails from people who just did that. This couple in Finland, because believe it or not, my website is hugely popular in Finland. I don't know why. This post is called Out of Blue. It's on my blog, but Juho, J-U-H-O, I don't know if that's how he pronounces his name, and his wife had a bad day. Somebody wouldn't buy what she was selling on eBay because that person thought it was too expensive, and somebody didn't hire Juho that day because he thought Juho was too expensive. Then they listen to the MP3 and they do the exercise. The guy who didn't hire Juho called Juho and hired him at the high price without any complaint, and the wife sold her product on eBay. All of this happened within 2 hours. So you really, really, really want to download the MP3. Just, you know, hint, hint.
Well, you know, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I'm looking, you know, kind of at my own past, my own experience with money. And money really is a boogeyman.
Yeah.
It is. Numbers are also strongly associated with money.
Mm-hmm.
So I always, you know, I'm very intelligent. I have no issues with intelligence. Even as a kid in school, an equation in biology class was easy to solve. I could never get the right answer in math class,
mm-hmm.
or algebra class. It just wasn't going to happen. Well, I didn't care. It was associated with money.
Mm.
Money was the bad guy. And so I have this whole historical thing. For 40-some years, I've been hating money. And, you know, money was a representation of everything wrong with society, wrong with my life, wrong with the world. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, I guess it's no wonder I'm broke. You know, because it's not like I'm a big spender. You know, people talk about $300 pairs of shoes. I can't even imagine a $300 pair of shoes.
Mm.
Or a store that even charges that much for it, simply because I tend to be very frugal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's not a case of poor spending habits. When you don't have much of it, if you don't spend it right, you're soon living under a bridge, you know?
Well, I have two things to say to that. The monster is real.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look at what happens in the world. I'm not saying the monster isn't real. But what I'm saying is you can change your relationship. There's, you know, the macro economy, and there's your individual economy. And just like terrible things happen in the world, you can change your relationship. It's not your fault that you have a money monster. I am so not one of those law of attraction people who blames you. Oh, you had a bad thought. Oh, you must have brought that on yourself. It doesn't fly for me. I was a straight-A student, hit by a car, thrown in a coma, not because I had a bad thought. I was actually very, very happy at the time. I also, despite the coma, and despite being homeless my, you know, senior year of high school, I still graduated with honors and went to this top mega difficult college. And after all that, you know, and you're told your whole life get a good education and you'll make a good living, it wasn't true. I had a great education, I was highly qualified, and I was making $100 a month because I didn't want to be around the biker. If you see the evil in the world, you don't want to be with it. That's your monster. And you can change the relationship. But the monster is real. You just don't have to have them in your life.
Well, you know, I really kind of love your imagery that you're using to take people through this process, because it is, you know, quite, It's something that I can really see being effective. You know, as I'm listening to you talking about it, it's like, oh yeah, you know, that really is, because, you know, really, most of us, love is what it's really all about.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole relationship with money really boils down to the love issue.
Are you love? I think that is the central question of existence. And it's not just loved by your parents or loved by your husband or loved by the universe, but I think feeling loved by the universe and feeling loved by yourself is identical. When you feel loved, you feel loved, regardless of where it's coming from. The interesting thing about having a money honey and making it a real person is it gives us access to intuition and wisdom that we wouldn't have if it was all up to us. And romantic, erotic love, just like Napoleon Hill says, is the highest energy of the universe. We live in a sexual universe where it's, you know, everything is a pulse. This is what's so fascinating, is on the level of quantum mechanics, there is nothing that is matter. Everything we consider matter is just pulses of light, pulses of energy and light. So there's this marriage of all these polarities, light, dark, wanting to merge, dancing around each other. This is getting a little intellectual. I should probably get off the track. But it's all this tension between separating and coming together. You know, splitting ourselves up as the universe and then discovering ourselves again through the eyes of ourselves as the other. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because, you know, sex is a primal drive in us, okay? That's part of our wiring, our hard wiring, you know, in ourselves. And by using that as a modem to our connection to with the universe and with our financial success, with love and everything else, makes sense, because the hard wiring is already in place.
Yeah, and we want to feel whole. So having our mate, a romantic mate, makes us feel whole as human beings. I know you're supposed to be whole, you know, on your own, but we aren't really. And this gives us an opportunity to heal that. It is a projection of ourselves, and yet it's also outside ourselves, which is why you get to hear all sorts of, like, cool, intuitive, psychic things that don't make sense until later when you look back. It's like, oh, that's why money wanted me to do that. Now I understand. At the time, it's just like, okay, if that's what you want, I'll set my alarm clock and go on a walk every morning at 8 a.m. Fine, I don't want to, but yep. And the funny, that's been his thing with me, is he just wants to walk at 8 a.m. and I'm not a morning person.
Uh-huh.
And I kept waking up at 8 without even setting the alarm clock because he wanted to go walk. And I found that I could think more clearly, and it changed my circadian rhythms, which, being the night person I was, is terrible, terrible for your body. And those little walks, all of a sudden, out of the blue, I was awake and sleeping at the right time, which is like, oh my God, he cares about my health. Now it makes sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because it's the whole self.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even when you look at relationships with your loved ones, you want them to do things that are healthy for them.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not necessarily something that directly impacts you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always nagging my fiancé that he needs to eat more vegetables. And, you know, that's just one of those things, you know?
And it's funny, because he's kind of demanding, too. He doesn't like to live in my house when it's cluttered. He just like, I don't like it here. I just replaced my nightstand because he didn't like the one I had. And when I replaced it, I just felt like so much better. Oh, I've got this really pretty piece of furniture. I went through the hassle of assembling it. And when I do what he wants me to do, like even he would say, I want you to wash the dishes. I don't want to be in a house with dirty dishes. I did that and then made like $4,300 a couple of hours later. Something shifts and flows, I think, the way you feel about yourself. So there's the part that makes sense, where, you know, if money says don't take that job because they're offering too little money, then you don't take that job. I got a letter from a client who didn't take the job that she wanted but was offering too much money, so she said no, so they came back and offered her more money.
Uh-huh.
That makes sense. You know, money says, don't you dare undervalue yourself. Your worth is this. Don't you dare let somebody tell you less. That's very logical. And
we're always our own worst critics. We tend to be very hard on ourselves. We tend to undervalue ourselves. We tend to overly criticize ourselves.
Yeah. So shut up and listen to what your money says. You know, he will be much nicer to you. If he's not, he's your monster, and boot him out.
Yeah, that really, really, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me. You know, we are winding close to the end of the program. So you want to tell everybody where to find your website again and
yes,
about the EP3 they can download?
AbundanceAndProsperity.com. There is a free MP3 teleclass download. Stuart Tan, who had interviewed Donald Trump and Tony Robbins, when he asked me if he could interview me, and he told me where to look up the people he had already interviewed, my jaw just hit the floor. And he found me on Facebook, of all places. And it was such a great, fun, educational interview that I decided, you know, I have to give it away so that people can get value. So go to AbundanceAndProsperity.com, join my VIP list so that you can get, you know, all the best news and articles and special deals and get the download and poke around the site, AbundanceAndProsperity.com. It's a fun site.
Well, with that, we are to the end of the program. Morgana, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight and being such a wonderful guest.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I've enjoyed the program tonight, and I hope our entire audience has as well. And I hope that they've also found that it provided plenty of food for thought and more illumination for their personal journey towards truth.
Yay.
Join us next week as we bring you another fascinating episode of The Dawn of Shades with Marshall Summers. With that, we are out of time. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and good night.